This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
It is time for the tournament update, driven by Nissan. We have reached the final four in the men's tournament. Of course, we get two big games tonight. And I will tell you, I am of the belief both these games are going to be flops. I hope that they're good games. I hope I'm wrong. That it used to be the beauty of the tournament was that no matter how good a team was, UNLV, Duke, the year the UNLV won, they got a challenge from Ball State. There was always going to be that one game where they were going to get challenged. Now, it might only be one game, but they were going to get at least one game where down the stretch of that game, they were going to have to make some plays and hit some shots and get some stops. I don't know if that's going to be the case this year because UConn looks like an absolute juggernaut. Now, I was looking, of course, you know me, I'm always on the TikTok. There's a great account on TikTok. I think it's Lock and Cash Sports. Maybe it's just Lock Cash Sports. I'm not sure. But it's basically a betting account. I think he's a Jersey guy. But he was kind of giving you some stats about the game and why. And I kind of feel the same way. They're both really high lines tonight. UConn, Alabama. Bama's an 11.5-point favorite. You'd have to go back to 85 to find an underdog of double digits to win outright. So that tells, and UConn has won these games, I think it's by an average of like 27 or 28 points. I mean, they've just been, it's like the old time about the women's tournament, like a decade ago, where it was just UConn and everybody else. It feels like in the men's tournament this year, it's UConn and everybody else. And then you might think, well, what about Purdue and NC State? NC State's only a 9.5-point underdog, but like seeds of 10 or higher in the Final Four, they're 0-9 outright. So maybe you get a good, maybe they cover, but to expect an upset, and I guess you really don't really want an upset, right? Like at this point, let's see UConn versus Purdue. Unfortunately, to get to UConn versus Purdue, you got to sit through tonight, and probably both games are not going to be that close. They're probably going to be flops. And that has been your tournament update, driven by Nissan. You deserve a car that thrills you. And Nissan's got an exciting full line that will put goosebumps on your goosebumps, unlike the games tonight. Experience the thrill for yourself. Shop your local Nissan store and NissanUSA.com today. All right, let's get a couple more calls in here. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. Ray is in Queens. Ray, what's going on, my man?
Hey, what's going on? How you doing today?
I'm good, Ray. What's up? What you got?
Oh, man. These guys, these New York people, man, I think we're just spoiled. They want instant gratification. There's nothing wrong with Julius Randle. He was what he is when we got him. And I think part of the problem is what superstar are we going to get? People have to understand, if we want Julius Randle gone, would we be better off if we had Zion Williamson? He doesn't play. Kawhi Leonard, that's a joke. So what are they expecting? I guess because Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving both came on the Nets, they felt like the Knicks could do that, but you see where that got them.
Yeah, well, look, I'm not going to say, Ray, thanks for the phone call. I'm not going to say that Randle doesn't have any issues. I think he's got some issues, but I would much rather have every option available to me hit the playoff time, and he's a big part of it. Now, unfortunately, it was always going to be flawed, and I think at this point, there became a point where you just realize it's not going to happen this year. You can't expect to bring him back in, given the amount of focus he takes off on the offensive side, and reincorporate him into the offense coming off an injury, coming off the time off. He's generally a guy who takes a little while to get back into the flow of things. We've seen that with him coming off injury and the games being this important and everything. So it was clear it was not going to happen, but it's unfortunate. In a perfect world, again, I think that you're always going to kind of think back to January when this season is over and think of what could have been. Ron is in Westchester. Ron, what's up?
Yeah, Larry.
I'm Gordon. I'm the other guy. That's the first time I've ever been confused with Larry. But that's all right. I've been called worse, Ron. It's all right.
All right. If you want to hang up now, it's okay.
No, it's not.
I can't get any more deflated than I already am after this Randle news.
No, don't be deflated, please.
Well, here's what I'll say. Randle playoffs, we know, as you pointed out earlier in the show, is very different than Randle regular season. And I would contend that same philosophy holds true with many players. If folks can recall a few short years ago, Reggie Bullock. I mean, the guy could have hit the barn out of the barn from three in the playoffs, and he had a stellar regular season from three. And I'm interested to see how the Knicks are going to perform in the playoffs, the ones who are still playing. For example, Dante DiVincenzo. Will he hit 5-6 three-pointers when in the playoffs things get a little bit tighter? The nerves start to creep up a little bit more. Of course, he's championship material, albeit, you know, on a Golden State team and a Bucks team that he wasn't a second or tertiary option. But my point of the call, as you've been pointing out to the folks who are happy in some ways, Randle not being in the playoffs because of his indecisiveness and his stagnancy on offense when those moments are the brightest. What are the Knicks going to do when Brunson gets double-teamed at half court? And you know the scout is out, all right? The Mavs played it to a T. I think the Bucks did it a little bit as well. So when you've got coaches whose their sole job is to watch film and to devise strategy, Josh Hart's not going to drop 31 points every game, all right? There's no degree of frequency of that. It is absolutely just ludicrous thinking of any Knicks fan out there. If you call yourself a Knicks fan and you think we're better off chemistry-wise or from an offensive utility standpoint, not having Randle when Brunson is double-teamed, when he's suffocating at half court, who's going to be the person creating their own shot off the dribble? Deuce McBride? Bojan Bogdanovic? Have you seen Bojan?
Yeah, Bogdan. Yeah, Ron, I hear you, and thanks for the phone call. I like the Bogdanovic move when they made it. I was not as crazy about Alex Burks when they made those two moves at the trade deadline, although they were wildly praised. Hey, you didn't have to give up any number ones. You get these two guys who will be... And I do think that there is some part of it that you didn't think that you were... They weren't coming here to be as featured as they're being forced to be because of the Randle injury and the OG injury, so maybe... I think that Bogdanovic is starting to show you a little signs, although it has been, it really is trying to find some silver linings a lot of times. So both those moves have not worked, but I think that you're starting to see why the Knicks are struggling is that teams realize, and in the playoffs, it's going to be more so. Down the stretch of that game last night against the Bulls, it felt like it was Jalen Brunson and everybody else. It was get the ball in Brunson's hands and let's see if he can... And he can make something happen. And I don't think that that's a... It was not a winning strategy when it was Randle in the first year. I don't think it's going to be a winning strategy this year. He's going to have to get some help. And the options are the options. So you got five games here left in the regular season to hopefully kind of fine-tune things and get guys in a better spot so that they're rested up and ready to go. Because while I will be willing to give them some breaks because they're not going to be 100% come playoff time, you and I both know that's not going to be... If the Knicks go out in the first round, it's going to be seen as a tremendous disappointment. And the reality of the situation, the injuries, whatever, how you got there by being forced to play guys heavy minutes, there's not going to be any excuses. Because the one person... The number one person who is going to get the blame if the Knicks do not fire in the playoffs and live up to the expectations is the coach. We know that going in. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. Coming up, we talk some football, Jets, Giants, draft next on the Gordon Damer Show, 98.7 FM, ESPN New York. Ron is in Westchester. Ron, what's up?
Yeah, Larry.
I'm Gordon.
This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
And we've been talking about the Knicks and Julius Randle a lot this first couple of hours, but I want to kind of shift to the football with the Jets, the Giants, the draft quickly approaching. Oh, will there ever be a year where we're talking, the draft is quickly approaching and the Jets and Giants, that neither of them are prominently featured in the first 10 picks of the draft? Is there ever going to be a year? And I was thinking to myself, imagine, if you will, it's probably, there's somebody out there that's experienced it, but imagine, close your eyes, not if you're driving, but if you're just sitting around the radio, imagine you are a Jets fan. I'm very sorry, but just imagine. It's just a thought experiment. It's not real. Imagine you're a Jets fan, and after their last game of the season this year, you slipped into a coma, right? and you woke up this week. You came out of your coma. You're back. Everybody's happy. You're healthy. Thank God. And as you were kind of catching up on what you've missed involving your favorite team, your buddy who might be also a Jet fan is kind of listing the things that that have gone on. Fixing the offensive line, right? Oh, yeah, we got Tyron Smith from the Cowboys. We got Tyron Smith from the Cowboys? Yeah, we also got Morgan Moses. We brought back Morgan Moses, Fanta. What about the receiver? Well, we got Mike Williams from the Chargers. We got Mike Williams. Wow, he's going to be now the second receiver. We also picked up Hassan Reddick in a trade with the We got Hassan Reddick. That's amazing. What about the backup quarterback? We got Tyrod Taylor. We got Tyrod Taylor for in case Aaron Rodgers happens to miss a game. That's amazing. You're picking at number 10. What's the conversation about? And you do all these things. You run down all these things. And then just when you feel like you've covered it all with your favorite team in the time you've missed while you've been in this medical situation, you finally think to yourself, oh, yeah, Steve, your friend's name is Steve. Steve, by the way, I forgot to ask you, where did Zach Wilson end up getting traded? And then Steve looks at you, and you can tell by the look on his face that something's wrong, and you find out that he's still on the team. Now, look, the draft is 3 weeks away, and I've said this before, and it's funny because now even, you know those reports that they put out, like the what do you call it, the aggregators, they put out the reports of, oh, well, this team is talking about this. It's not really real, but it's just something to kind of throw it out there to kind of make you think about the possibilities that your team might do this or do that. Even those reports don't sound convincing. Like, it seems like everybody's just kind of throwing a dart in the dark at this point about where Zach Wilson will end up. I will just say this, and I will make this a receipt just to show you I'm not the only person taking the receipts. I'm also making the receipts. Eventually, this will be taken care of. Not even the Jets can allow Zach Wilson to be on the team next. There's no chance that will happen. I know it doesn't feel great right now, and I know once you heard Woody Johnson's comments a couple of weeks ago that we're not going to just simply release him, they'll be forced to release him. There's no way that even the Jets could allow, and what they'll say is, we intended to keep Zach Wilson, but in the best interest of him, in the best interest of our organization, we've decided to part ways with Zach Wilson if they can't find a trade. Now, I would have thought, and I would think that when Larry and I do our first show after the draft, I don't know if we're on that Monday or whenever, but whenever we're on that first show after the draft, I will lock it in. Zach Wilson will not be on the New York Jets after that point. That will be my receipt. I am confident not even the Jets. And again, if he is on the team, that points the fingers to one person and one person only. You know the coach doesn't want him here. You know the GM doesn't want him here. I don't care what glowing words Aaron Rodgers has about him. Even the shadow GM is not going to put that out there that he wants Zach Wilson to stay here or anything like that. The best thing for everyone, mostly the Jets included, is to make sure that Zach Wilson is not here. And I am confident by the time the draft is over, we will get word maybe on day two, maybe day three. I'm not sure. But by the time Larry and I do our first show after the draft, I am confident Zach Wilson will not be on the team, if not before. I'd like to think that it will be. That will be a sad day for me as a talk show host, but for Jet fans, it will be reason to celebrate. But I don't think that it does feel like at this point it's going to be hard to find any value whatsoever. And even the chances of like a seventh-round pick, it does feel like it's pointing in the direction of just releasing him and being forced to eat that money, despite what Woody Johnson said. All right, so that's the first thing on the Jets. The second thing on the Jets is, I think now at this point we have, 19 days until the draft? This is another receipt I would like to make. Do you have the sound effect ready, Harvey? Have you fallen asleep back there? All right, he's good. He's locked in. The Jets will, with their first round, assuming they stay at 10, the Jets will select Brock Bowers with their first round selection. The shadow GM went all those years in Green Bay without the Packers listening to his advice or taking his interest in mind. He wants a skill position player. It will be I think the main receivers will be gone by then, so they're going to take Brock Bowers. And this is what the receipt is. The Jets will take Brock Bowers. Jet fans will celebrate that selection because it's a skill position player. And by the time the schedule gets to October, by the time the Jets play their first game in October, either one of their tackles, the left tackle or the right tackle, will miss at least one game. That will be my... If the Jets select anything outside of an offensive lineman with that first... This draft, all they're talking about is receivers and linemen. And it's almost like if you're not taking linemen and receivers, one of each in the first three rounds, you're making a mistake because it's just that loaded in those two positions. Unless there's no team that just has so many tackles that they can't afford to have another one. And think about it. Even if both guys on the Jets stay healthy, they're not long-term solutions, right? Tyron Smith is here on a one-year deal, and given his injury history, there's a good chance that before too long, he's going to be on the sidelines hurt. So moving forward even beyond this year, it's not like it might be the last year for Joe Douglas, it might be the last year for Robert Saleh, but it's not the last year of the Jets. We know that much. So they're going to need a standout left tackle, and you're hoping that beyond this year, you're not going to be picking in the top 10 year in and year out. So this might be your chance to really, a position of need, and it's a position that is available in this year's draft. You just have to identify the right one. But I get the feeling the Jets are not going that route. I think it's a mistake, but I think they're going to go skill position, and my receipt will be they're taking Brock Bowers with the 10th pick in the draft, and by the time they play their first game in October, either the left tackle or the right tackle, Morgan Moses the right tackle, Tyron Smith the left tackle, one of those, if not both, will miss time as a result of an injury. So we can lock that in. Can we lock that in? There we go. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. All right, the other thing about the moving over to the Giants. Giants are picking sixth, right? And here's the thing. This is going to be now the third draft for Joe Shane. And I think that the jury is still very much out on whether or not Joe Shane is a good GM or a bad GM. He's had some hits on the team. He's had, I would say, the bigger moves have been the misses. Daniel Jones, signing Daniel Jones to that extension, big miss. Evan Neal with the 7th pick in the draft, major miss. The Darren Waller trade, which seemed too good. We got Darren Waller for a 3rd-round pick? That's too good to be true. Well, you know what they say about deals that are too good to be true. So I don't know if he's a good GM or a bad GM. I will say this. He is by far, if you want to be different than the person you got the job before you, he is certainly different than the guy who was the Giants GM before him. He is certainly a whole lot better at not tipping his hand in what way he is going to be drafting come round one. With Dave Gettleman, part of it, I guess, was because the Giants were just drafting so high every single year. It was clear what the Giants were going to do. It was clear the year they took Saquon, we were having conversations well before that. It wasn't like all of a sudden drafted. Oh, you know what? The Giants might take Saquon. No, we knew for weeks the Giants are taking Saquon Barkley at number 2. And the only conversations we were having were, are the Giants really going to take Saquon Barkley at number 2? Do you really think that they're going to do that? But no, we knew that was not a surprise. That was not like, oh my God, I can't believe it when that pick was handed in. That was the expectation. And we've had we had conversations for years after that because it was such a mistake. The year they took Daniel Jones. Now that year they had 2 first-round picks. So we thought, I think they had 6 and 17. The conversation was more about, well, maybe they'll take Daniel Jones and is it an overdraft at 17? Never mind when it was the 6th pick. So it was not a surprise there that they took Daniel Jones. It was in the weeks before the draft, it was clear they were going to take Daniel Jones at some point. And then the last year, the offensive lineman, Andrew Thomas, it was just a question at 4, which offensive lineman they wanted because there was like 3 or 4 good guys that year. This year, we're 19 days away from and I would say, I don't have perfect memory, but I would say 19 days before the draft in the Saquon year, we absolutely knew they were taking Saquon. The year with Daniel Jones, it was about this point. Maybe it was we were starting to get a real inkling that the Giants like Daniel Jones. And the offensive lineman, the year they took Andrew Thomas, it was clear they had to do something about the offensive line because all the other moves that Dave Gettleman made were horrendous. So they had to draft somebody with that fourth pick. This year, though, you've seen plenty of reasons why the Giants could trade up. We've seen plenty of reasons why they could trade down. They could stand pat. They could take a quarterback. They could take a wide receiver. Nobody hit, even in this day and age of hot takes, nobody has suggested they're going to take a running back because we will live to be 1,000 years old and no one will take a running back at 6 ever again. But when you run the scenarios for the Giants, and certainly want to hear from you at this at 1-800-919-ESPN, to me, when you run through all the various scenarios of the Giants taking a quarterback, it feels like a big mistake. A big mistake. So what are some of the scenarios? Well, obviously, they're at 6. And it feels like it's clear that they could be in the market for a quarterback, and it's clear there are other teams that are in a market for a quarterback behind them. So those teams would like to, if you want to get ahead of the Giants and get that quarterback, you're going to have to trade up, which means if the Giants really want one of those quarterbacks, they're going to have to trade up. Now, they can't trade up to 1. There's no way that they're going to move up to 2 because Washington has that second pick. But if you're talking about moving up to 3 or 4, the amount of future picks that you will have to move to move up that spot, you're hurting the quarterback that you are selecting by trading away future assets to surround the quarterback with. And it feels like you're almost certainly going to have to move up from 6. It doesn't feel like if you really want a quarterback that he's still going to be available at 6. It feels like that the quarterbacks could go 1, 2, 3, and 4, if not at number 5. So the Vikings and Broncos, they'll probably have a good, as well as Joe Shane has done of hiding what his intentions are, you would think that the Vikings and the Broncos, they would have a pretty good idea of what the Giants are going to do if they stay at 6, so they have to move up in front of them. So if you're taking a quarterback at that point, you're going to be giving up more assets than you want to be doing because you have to move up. And then if you think, all right, well, maybe the Vikings and the Broncos, they don't have the resources to move up. And the Giants could just get the same guy without moving up. Do you really feel like that's a great home run either, right? Like taking the last guy out of the hat, do you feel like that's going to line up with doing really well? When again, you're bringing him into a situation where he's not going to be loaded with talent. With whoever the Giants quarterback next year is, unless it's Daniel Jones and they use that pick on a wide receiver, if you're using that pick on a quarterback, he's coming into this situation, no number one receiver, no true tight end, running game's kind of a mess, offensive line is still a work in progress. So even if whoever that guy is drops to you, it's the last of the bunch, it's the last guy picked. When you have two teams that are desperate for quarterbacks, they don't want to move up. Those first three teams, who all took quarterbacks almost certainly, didn't want them either. That fourth quarterback for your offense, it just feels like a mistake. So the more I go through it, to me, the best scenario for the Giants probably would be a trade down, but is there someone out there who's willing to trade up? That seems to be the real rub, if it's true that the Giants want a quarterback. Now, if the Giants are not in the market for a quarterback and all those reports are erroneous, well, then by all means, Broncos might want to move up there. Vikings might want to move up there. Maybe the Raiders. I'm not sure where the Raiders are picking, but whoever. Okay, fine. If one of those teams want to move up, great. But it feels like at this point, the possibilities, the real realistic possibilities are Giants move up to take a quarterback, stand pat to take a quarterback, or they stand pat and take a wide receiver. To me, of those possibilities, taking the wide receiver and realizing that this is a rebuild situation that is not going to be, you're not going to fix everything in one draft, and you're certainly not going to fix it by simply picking a quarterback and throwing him into this situation, which is one of the most untenable situations for a quarterback there is in the NFL. It feels like that the best move would be, let's build this out and let's start with scratch and let's start with the best wide receiver on the board when we pick, which might end up turning out to be Marvin Harrison Jr. If that would be the preferred way I would do it. But we shall see. We got 19 days to go. Joe Shane has done an excellent job of keeping the drama involved. So in terms of drama, that's great. In terms of whether or not it's the right decision, we'll have to wait 19 days to find out. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. Let's go to Jeff is on Long Island. Jeff, what's going on, man?
Hey, I just thought that, you know, with looking at the draft and the possible scenarios, I kind of agree with you that the Giants would trade down. You know, I think 4 and 5 are going to go Harrison and Neighbors after the first three, and then 6 will probably go Alt. So just want to know your opinion on maybe grabbing a corner and trading down.
A corner? Well, no, to me, Jeff, and thanks for the phone call. I think that the most important thing for the Giants to do is to use these picks on offense. They have got to start to build out this offense because time is not limitless. And one of the real hindrances for passing on a quarterback this year is if you're Joe Shane or certainly Brian Daboll, if I pass on it now, am I going to get a chance to do it later? I don't know. I mean, there was already talk this past year that they had to win games to keep the head coach's job. And that just shows you. Remember when they were winning these meaningless games and people were like, oh, these people that are only focused on the draft, it doesn't matter. They got to win some games. More important to win games now than some future draft pick. Really? Would you rather be picking 3 now? Would the Giants' future look better now if they had not beaten the Patriots? If they had not beaten Washington? They beat Washington twice. I mean, talk about just absolutely meaningless wins. You'd feel a whole lot better if the Giants were picking 2nd in the draft or 3rd in the draft. I would feel a whole lot better about their position. And so, no, I don't think that they can go defense, even if they do trade down. I think they got to, if they were smart, they would build out the offense outside of the quarterback. And it's funny because people will say, well, who cares if he's the 4th quarterback taken? Sometimes the quarterbacks who are taken later do better. Yeah, that's when they go to a good team. Like Lamar Jackson, yeah, he was taken later, but he went to a far better situation, a far better offense. Jalen Hurts, oh, he was picked in the 2nd round. He went to a better team, a better offensive situation. When you go to situations that are far more developed, yeah, I would be in favor of that. I don't just simply want to take the last guy who's left of the 4 when the first 3 teams didn't want him and the teams that are behind you didn't want to trade up and get him, and then you bring him up and bring him in to this situation where, again, talk about lacking of offense. There's a lot of lacking of offense. To me, I would have no problem that it depends on who he picks, but I would have no problems if Joe Shane, the first 3 picks, used them all on offense. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. Coming up, we'll talk on some baseball stuff, some overreaction. Oh, my. Has anybody seen a baseball season before? Because judging by the past week, you would think no one has ever experienced a baseball season before for the Yankees and certainly for the Mets. We'll get into that next. It's the Gordon Damer Show. It is 98.7 FM, ESPN New York.
This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
It has felt lately harder. I feel like the internet has taught me all I've needed to know. Like, I think I've learned all the information that the internet has to provide in terms of interesting but yet useless facts. But then sometimes the internet surprises you. I found out one this week that when I first saw it, I said, well, there's no way that can be true. There's no way I can only be finding out this now. So I will reveal what that is in another scintillating round of what I've learned on TikTok coming up at 6 o'clock. Harvey, are you excited?
Thrilled.
What are you doing over there? You all right? You seem distracted.
I'm working. What are you doing?
I'm asking you a question on the radio, and I figured as much as you love the airtime, you would be ready to jump at that chance.
A brother can't ponder for a few seconds?
Well, you could turn on the mic and say, that's interesting. Let me think about it. Radio silence is not, I don't know how long you've been in radio, but generally dead air is not what you're looking for.
Oh, stop it. I think you'd be fine with at least 2 seconds of dead air.
I don't like it. Don't like it. I feel like I'm talking to you're distracted by other things. And you don't really care about me or the show.
You did say there's like a fact for this edition that
I literally just said that. Did you not hear
Can
me
I
say that?
Can I harp on it? I want to harp on it with you. My goodness,
This is like when your parents would say something to you and you weren't really paying attention, and then all of a sudden you kind of catch on. Oh yeah, 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 oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm accentuating the point for you, with you. You know, I don't think you really like me that much, huh?
I think now, do you want me to use the fact on you, or do you want me to use the fact on Julian?
You tell me. Do you want me to guess correctly or wrongly?
I'm interested in your opinion. I'm not saying I'm going to do it. I might switch it up on you.
How about you surprise me? How about that?
All right.
You go with surprises.
All right. That comes up at 6 o'clock. Can't wait, right? That is what I learned on TikTok. Yes. All right. Let's get into some baseball stuff, because this week has been very maddening. And I can't remember what I was saying. Oh, yeah, about the Jet fans building themselves up and only to be let down. And it happens on a yearly basis. You ever find yourself listening to an argument that you're not involved in, but you're listening to both sides of the argument and you end up hating both sides? Because that's what it felt like in the last week since the Yankees and the Mets opened the season. The Yankees go out and just have this amazing start to the season, right? They sweep the Astros 2-3 against the Diamondbacks. Awesome. Fantastic. Everything that you'd want, right? Nice hot start. It's always fun to win on opening day. You've been waiting for it forever. You're waiting all winter. After the season the Yankees had last year, you're hoping for a different year. And it felt like, I don't know, it felt like the takeaway was all of a sudden, now it's clear the Yankees are going to be real contenders this year. Even though they lost yesterday at the home opener, when was that? Was that Thursday? I don't even remember the days. But it's clear that the Yankees are real contenders. It's clear. Last year was whatever, but now they're going to be real good. They're going to compete for the division. They're going to compete for the American League championship and World Series. They played, what, 6 games? There's 6, what was it, 6-2? Even before they lost a game and they get off to the start that they got off to. It was like all of a sudden now 5 games was enough to change your opinion. Like, 8 games of a season is like what? Like 6% of a season? But the bold proclamations that you hear, it'd be like going to a movie and the opening credits are still rolling and you turn to your buddy, oh, this movie is excellent. This is a fantastic movie. It's just started. How can you change your opinions based on the opening week? I get it. It's and at least with the Yankee fans, you have the other side you have a portion of the fan base that's just so negative all the time. They could go 162-0 and they would still, oh, it doesn't matter. You didn't win the World Series. Like, I get it. But I don't know. It just kind of felt like this week there was a good portion of the callers that I heard or the shows that I heard where it was like, now it's been clear. Now we can tell what the trajectory of this Yankee season now is crystal clear. When it was 5 games, 6 games, 7. Like, guys, take a breath. Every year, it feels like we forget how long a baseball season is. It's just begun. It's just started. And as great as the Astros series was or the Diamondback series was, and it beats the alternative, granted, it doesn't mean anything for the long. Nothing's changed. Nothing has changed. The Yankees came into the season, it felt like, with a wide range of outcomes, right? They could really be a contender, or they could fall short like they did last year and have another disappointing year, and the holes are just so great that you can't make up for the problems in the rotation, and they miss the playoffs again, or somewhere in between. We'll find out as we go along. But nothing. If your opinion has been changed in what the start of the season is, the first 8 games of the season, how strongly did you believe... How easily are you to be convinced on things? It feels like that's a very small sample size to all of a sudden change your opinion. Now, on the other side, the Yankee fans were bad. The Met fans, oh my God, the Met fans were worse. The fact that they started 0-5, the reaction across the board was so overblown. I thought it was a parody. I thought it was a joke. And it would be one thing for diehard Met fans, the Frank Flemings of the world to be losing it. Gary Cohen on the broadcast, this feels like rock bottom. This is rock bottom means it can't get any worse. You don't think it can get worse from 0-5? With all the baseball that Gary Cohn has seen, you don't think it can get worse from 0-5? Trust me, he knows it could absolutely get worse from 0-5. Everybody needs to take a breath. Everybody needs to take a rest and allow the season. And I get it. When your team doesn't win on opening day, it's frustrating. And when they start the season and are not scoring runs, it's frustrating. But that's the thing. The Mets started 0-5 mainly because of the offense, mainly because guys at the top of the lineup weren't hitting. Now, I don't know how the Mets season's going to go. I have my expectations and my thoughts on it. But I'm pretty confident that between Francisco Lindor, Brandon Nimmo, and Jeff McNeil, I'm pretty sure those guys are going to hit. I'm pretty sure Francisco Lindor is going to put up some numbers. I'm pretty sure Brandon Nimmo is going to put up some numbers. And I'm pretty sure Jeff McNeil is going to hit better than 100. Okay? Everybody just needs to take a breath and let's see how this plays out. Because the Mets are playing right now and they're leading 5-2. And if they go on and win this game, they'll start the season 3-5. And it'll have a different feel for some of you who are judging things day in and day out of a 162-game baseball season. But with the way they got all the season slipping away, this can really get away from them in four games, in five games? Get away from what? You're not competing with the Braves and Phillies. Get that out of your head. The Mets this year, top end, is they're going to hang around 500. They're going to try to stay in the race if they can for a playoff spot. And with the amount of playoff spots, it's kind of hard to completely play yourself out of it unless you're just a terrible team. And the Mets have enough major league talent where I don't think they're going to be a terrible team. And if they hang around 500 and hang around the playoffs, there's a possibility that when you get to the trade deadline, maybe they make an addition or two, you get Senga back at some point, and you could maybe top end, sneak your way into the playoffs, and away you go from there. Now, is that going to happen? Probably not. But it's not, I don't think that you're going to get to the trade deadline and you'll be able to say, well, it was clear the Mets season was over when they started 0-5. Every year, we forget how long a baseball season is. You will forget most of what happens in the opening month by the time you hit June. There are so many twists and turns. And I'll say this. You can make the argument, especially for the Mets, staying in the race, like that top end that I gave you where you hang around 500, that's probably bad from the standpoint of the future of Pete Alonso. Because if you're in the race, for as long as you're realistically in the race, you cannot trade Pete Alonso. And I think it's pretty clear at this point, in the long term, they're not going to sign Pete Alonso. So the worst place you can be in any sport these days is the middle. Like, you're not really good, but you're not really bad. And one of the reasons why the middle is the worst is because to get out of the middle, most of the time, you have to be really bad. Like, you find yourself in the middle, and then it's going to get worse from there. So let's say the Mets do have the bad season. Everything goes wrong. Well, then, okay, then you got a real read of what you need to improve and how many things you have to improve. And clearly, it's more than you were hoping to have to improve on beyond this. But then at least you have a flat line of, okay, moving forward, there's not going to be that much of a problem of, I think, trading Pete Alonso if you were still in the race, right? If you're really bad, if you're one of the worst teams in the National League, clearly at that point, you're not going to sign Pete Alonso to an 8-9 year contract because you're not going anywhere with him. He's about to turn 30, and it's a longer rebuild than you were hoping to be. If you're not going to sign him long-term and you're still in the race, I think that that's the worst-case scenario because then he's probably going to walk out the door for nothing. And I will say this as well, and it's kind of weird to me that the attention that Steve Cohen gets, but there's never any criticism. He has now been the owner. This is his fourth season as the owner. And when he took out the job, okay, fine, he bought the team. He was the godsend, right? Taking it away from the Wilpons. We're finally going to be spending money. And everybody said, you got to give it time. He even said, within the first 3 to 5 years, we expect to be competing for championships. Where are we on that timeline? Because it already feels like they're starting over. And I'll say this for anybody, oh, you're just being overly critical. You're the Yankee fan. If I had told Met fans that when Steve Cohen took over, you had three seasons, because this year, if it's bad, you have three seasons where you finish under 500, and the one time you make the playoffs, you get bounced almost immediately. And by the time year four is over, it's basically a work in progress. There's not a single Met fan, if they were being honest, that they would have signed up for that, that they would have expected that. And I'm pretty sure you go through any owner in any team where they're spending as much as they're spending, but the results have not been there. If it's Woody Johnson, if it's John Mara, if it's James Dolan, Hal Steinbrenner, whoever owns the Devils and the Islanders, I'm not sure. But you would get criticism. And it feels like Steve Cohen is just kind of immune from that criticism. It just feels like he's immune. And to think about it, it feels like this year, the expectation, well, this is an evaluation year. Be careful with that. When I came back to this station in 2017, that was the year that the Jets were going to have an evaluation year. Well, we're going to see how the young kids play. We're going to give them a chance to play at the major league level, and we'll be able to. The only evaluating, or the end of the evaluation, was the whole team was terrible. And if you're going to be bad, be bad. That's fine. If you're going to be bad, be really bad. Be the worst that you can be. But see, that's the problem. The Mets are too good to be that bad, and that leaves them in the middle. And the middle in any sport these days is the worst spot to be. Because you think, oh, well, we're in the middle. We just have to do a little bit more to get to the top. No. Most times, when you're in the middle, what you really have to do is tear it down even more to get to the top. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. 1-800-919-3776. Coming up, more of your phone calls. It is the Gordon Damer Show. It is 98.7 FM, ESPN, New York.
This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Interesting choice. It is the Gordon Damer Show. Are you feeling all right over there, Harvey? That was an interesting.
What's wrong with the show? With the song?
The song? It's I don't know. It just doesn't. It feels like a rave, kind of taking some illegal substances kind of music.
Wow.
It's the only time that type of stuff sounds good. Are you a big EDM guy?
I used to be, actually, back in high school, but no, not anymore. Not these days, no.
Not anymore, right? You like something a little bit more peaceful than that. It just feels like.
Sometimes peaceful. I mean, sometimes you got to keep the intensity as well, especially if you're at the gym and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I understand that. I don't know that that necessarily gives you the intensity outside of the need to turn it down.
What's going on, man?
I don't know. I just I didn't think it was the appropriate. You know, like you have a certain vibe to the show. Didn't feel like that added to the vibe or fit with the vibe.
Did you want like a Randy Newman song? Is that what you
want? No, I don't know the Randy Newman song. I don't know that Randy. Well, why would you go Randy Newman?
You want this one? Is that what you wanted?
Well, I think I can work that in better than. Have I told you the Yankee lineup for tonight? Yeah, the Yankee lineup tonight. And this is a perfect example. Giancarlo Stanton is he's hitting fifth. And I feel like I've heard a lot of in the first week, and almost like surprised when they say, well, Giancarlo Stanton looks washed. Yes. Why would you think anything else? Wasn't that your expectation going into the season? I'm not changing my opinion on that based on the six games or the five games that he's played. But yes, that was my expectation going in. Why would I think it was going to get better? Did you watch him at all last year? Did you watch him really in the second half the year before that? The guy clearly has hit the decline phase, and that's really the only thing he hits. He'll hit a home run every once in a while, but those hot streaks where he used to, when he first got here, he'd have weeks where he was incredibly cold and real cold stretches. But then, all of a sudden, out of the blue, he'd go on these white-hot stretches where he was hitting everything hard and hitting home runs, and in the course of a week, he might hit 3-4 home runs and drive in a dozen runs. Those are going to be fewer and far between, and he's not going to have, certainly not that kind of hot streak anymore. but I'm not changing my opinion based on the yes. Where have you been? And if you were somebody who came into the season saying, no, I do expect Giancarlo Stanton to have a bounce back. I don't know who those people are. But five games, how convinced were you that it took five or six games to change your opinion? It couldn't have been that hard of a conviction that you had if all it took was less than a week to make you realize, you know what? I was wrong. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. Coming up next, it is a rousing edition of What I Learned This Week on TikTok. It's next on the Gordon Damer Show, 98.7 FM, ESPN New York.
This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.